10. The headquarters of the Apostles of Flame was a slender but magnificent tower of gleaming golden stone, rising like a shining javelin above the Sepatan River, in the exclusive Birragam quarter of Saro City. That soaring tower, Theramon thought, must be one of the most valuable pieces of real estate in the entire capital. He had never stopped to consider it before, but the Apostles had to be an exceedingly wealthy group. They owned their own radio and television stations. They published magazines and newspapers. They had this tremendous tower, and probably they controlled all sorts of other assets, too, that were less visibly theirs. He wondered how that was possible. A bunch of fanatic Puritan monks? Where would they have managed to get their hands on so many hundreds of millions of credits? But he realized such well-known industrialists as Boddicker 888 and Vivien 99 were outspoken adherents of the teachings of Mondior and his apostles. It wouldn't surprise him to know that men like Boddicker and Vivien, and others like them, were heavy contributors to the Apostles' treasury. And if the organization was even a tenth as old as it claimed to be, 10,000 years was what they said, and if it had invested its money wisely over the centuries, there was no telling what the Apostles could have achieved through the miracle of compound interest, Theramon thought. They might be worth billions. They might secretly own half of Saro City. It was worth looking into, he told himself. He entered the vast echoing entrance hall of the great tower and peered about in awe. Though he had never been here before, he had heard it was an extraordinarily lavish building, both inside and out. But nothing he had heard had prepared him for the reality of the cultist's building. A polished marble floor with inlays in a half a dozen brilliant colors stretched as far as he could see. The walls were covered with glittering golden mosaics in abstract patterns, rising to arched vaults high overhead. Chandeliers of woven gold and silver threw a shimmering shower of brightness over everything. At the opposite end from the entrance, Theramon saw what seemed to be a model of the whole universe, fashioned apparently entirely of precious metals and gems. Immense suspended globes, which seemed to represent the six suns, hung from the ceiling by invisible wires. Each of them cast an eerie light. At the opposite end from the entrance, Theramon saw what seemed to be a model of the whole universe, fashioned apparently entirely of precious metals and gems. Immense suspended globes, which seemed to represent the six suns, hung from the ceiling by invisible wires. Each of them cast an eerie light, a golden beam from the largest of them, which must be Onos, and a dim red glow from the Dovim globe, and cold, hard, blue-white from the Tanositha pair, and a gentler white light from Patru and Trey. A seventh globe, that must be Kalgash, moved slowly among them like a drifting balloon, its own colors changing as the shifting patterns of the sun's light played over its surface. As Theramon stood gaping in astonishment, a voice coming from nowhere in particular said, "May we have your name?"
"I'm Theramon 762. I have an appointment with Mondior."
"Yes. Please enter the chamber on your immediate left, Theramon 762. He saw no chamber on his immediate left, but then a segment of the mosaic-covered wall slid noiselessly open, revealing a small oval room, more an antechamber than a chamber. Green velvet hangings covered the walls, and a single bar of amber light provided illumination. He shrugged and stepped in. At once the door closed behind him, and he felt a distinct sensation of motion. This wasn't a room, it was a lift. Yes, he was rising, he was certain of it. Up and up and up he went in a very unhurried way. It took half an eternity before the lift chamber came to a halt and the door slid open once again. A black-robed figure was waiting for him.
"Would you come this way, please?"
A narrow hallway led a short distance into a kind of waiting room, where a large portrait of Mondior 71 occupied most of one entire wall. As Theramon entered, the portrait seemed to light up, coming strangely to life and glowing so that Mondior's dark, intense eyes looked straight at him, and the High Apostle's stern face took on a luminous inner radiance that made him seem almost beautiful in a fierce sort of way. Theramon met the portrait's gaze coolly enough, but even the tough-minded newspaper man found himself ever so slightly unnerved to think that very shortly he would be interviewing this very person. Mondior on radio or television was one thing, just some crazed preacher with an absurd message to peddle. But Mondior in the flesh, awesome, hypnotic, mysterious, if this portrait was any indication,
might be something else again. Theremin warned himself to be on his guard. The black-robed monk said,
"If you'll step inside, please."
The wall just to the left of the portrait opened. An office became visible within, as sparsely decorated as a cell. Nothing in it but a bare desk made of a single slab of polished stone and a low backless chair cut from a chunk of some unusual red-streaked gray wood placed in front of it. Behind the desk sat a man of obvious force and authority, wearing the black apostle's robe with red trim along the hood. He was very impressive, but he wasn't Mondior 71. Mondior, judging by his photographs and the way he seemed on television, had to be a man of 65 or 70, with a kind of intense masculine force about him. His hair was thick and wavy, black with broad streaks of white, and he had a full, fleshy face, a wide mouth, a strong nose, heavy jet-black eyebrows, dark, compelling eyes. But this one was young, surely not yet 40, and though he seemed powerful and highly masculine too, it was in an entirely different way. He was very thin, with a sharp, narrow face and tight, pursed lips. His hair curling down over his forehead under his hood was a strange brick-red color, and his eyes were a cold, unrelenting blue. No doubt this man was some high functionary in the organization, but Theremin's appointment was with Mondior. He had decided just this morning, after writing his story on the Apostle's latest fulmination, that he needed to know more about this mysterious cult. Everything they had ever said struck him as nonsense, of course, but it was beginning to seem like interesting nonsense, worth writing about in some detail. How better to learn more about them than to go straight to the top man? Assuming that was possible, that is. But to his surprise, they had told him when he called that he could have an audience with Mondior 71 that very day. It had seemed too easy. Now he began to realize that it had been too easy.
"I am Fadiman 66,
the sharp-faced man said in a light, flexible voice with none of Mondior's compelling thunder. Yet it was, Theremin suspected, the voice of someone who was accustomed to being obeyed.
"I am the public relations adjutant for the home district of our organization. It will be my pleasure to answer any questions you may have."
"My appointment was with Mondior himself," Theremin said. Solomon 66's chilly eyes betrayed no sign of surprise.
"You may think of me as the voice of Mondior."
"I understood it was to be a personal audience."
"It is. Anything said to me is shared with Mondior. Anything that comes from me is the word of Mondior. This should be understood."
"And nevertheless, I was given assurances that I'd be allowed to talk with Mondior. I have no doubt that what you tell me would be authoritative, but it just isn't information that I'm looking for. I'd like to form some opinion of what sort of man Mondior is. What his views are on other things besides the prophesied destruction of the world. What he thinks about..."
"I can only repeat what I have already said,"
Polyman declared, cutting in smoothly.
"You may think of me as the voice of Mondior. His Serenity will not be able to see you in person today."
"Then I would prefer to return on another day when His Serenity will be..."
"Permit me to inform you that Mondior does not make himself available for personal interviews. Not ever. Not ever.
His Serenity's work is much too urgent, now that only a matter of months stands between us and the Time of Flame." Polyman smiled suddenly, an unexpectedly warm and human smile, perhaps intended to take some of the sting out of the refusal and out of that melodramatic-sounding phrase, "the Time of Flame." Almost gently he said,
"I would guess that there's been a misunderstanding, that you didn't realize that your appointment would be with a spokesman for Mondior rather than with the High Apostle himself. But that's the way it must be. If you don't wish to speak with me, well, I regret that you've wasted your trip today. But I'm the most useful source of information you're going to be able to find here, now or at any other time."
Again the smile. It was the smile of a man who was coolly and unapologetically closing a door in Theremin's face. "Oh, very well," Theremin said after a moment or two of consideration. "I see I don't have much choice. I get you or I get nobody. All right, let's talk. How much time do I have?"
"As much as you need, though this first meeting will have to be a fairly brief one. And also," a grin, a surprising one, almost mischievous, "you must bear in mind that we have only 14 months altogether, and I've got a few other things to do during that time.
So I imagine. 14 months, you say, and then what?
You haven't read the Book of Revelations, then, I assume?
Not recently, actually.
Permit me, then.
Bottoman produced a thin, red-bound volume from some crevice of his apparently empty desk and slid it toward Theremin.
This is for you. You'll find much nourishment in it, I hope. Meanwhile, I can summarize the theme that appears to be of the greatest interest to you. Very shortly, exactly 418 days from now, to be extremely precise, on the 19th of Theptah next, a great transformation will come over our comfortable, familiar world. The six suns will enter the cave of darkness and disappear. The stars will make themselves manifest to us, and all Kalgash will be set ablaze.
He made it sound very casual, as though he might be talking about the coming of a rainstorm tomorrow afternoon, or the expected blossoming of some rare plant next week in the municipal botanical garden. All Kalgash set ablaze. The six suns entering the cave of darkness. The stars.
The stars? Theremin said aloud. And what in fact may they be?
They are the instruments of the gods.
Can you be more specific, do you think?
The nature of the stars will be made more than amply clear to us, said Fallerman 66, in a matter of 418 days.
Oh, when the current year of godliness comes to its end, said Theremin, on Theptar 19th of next year.
Fallerman looked pleasantly surprised.
So you have been studying our teachings?
Oh, to some extent. I've listened to Mondior's recent speeches, at any rate. I know about the 2049-year cycle. And the event you call the Time of Flame, I suppose you can't provide me with any sort of advanced description of that either.
You'll find something along those lines in the fifth chapter of the Book of Revelations. No, you needn't search for it now. I can quote it to you. From the stars there then reached down the heavenly flames that was the bearer of the will of the gods. And where the flames touched, the cities of Kalgash were consumed even to utter destruction. So that of man and the works of man, nothing whatever remained.
Theremin nodded. A sudden terrible cataclysm. Why?
The will of the gods. They have warned us against our wickedness and have given us a span of years in which to redeem ourselves. That span is what we call the Year of Godliness, a year 2049 human years long, about which you already appear to know. The current Year of Godliness is nearly at its end.
And then we'll all be wiped out, you think?
Not all of us, but most will, and our civilization will be destroyed. Those few who survive will face the immense task of rebuilding. This is, as you seem already to be aware, a melancholy repetitive cycle in human events. What is soon due to occur will not be the first time that mankind has failed the test of the gods. We have been struck down more than once before, and now we are on the verge of being struck down yet again.
The curious thing, Theremin thought, was that Philemon didn't seem at all crazy. Except for his odd robe, he could have been any sort of youngish businessman sitting in his handsome office. A loan applications officer, for instance, or an investment banker. He was obviously intelligent. He spoke clearly and well in a crisp, direct tone. He neither ranted nor raved, but the things he was saying in his crisp, direct way were the wildest sort of nonsensical babble. The contrast between what Philemon said and the way he said it was hard to take. Now he sat quietly, looking relaxed, waiting for the newspaper man to ask the next question.
I'll be frank, Theremin said after a little while. Like many people, I have difficulty accepting something this big which is handed to me simply as a revelation. I need solid proofs. But you don't show us any. Take it on faith, you say. There's no tangible evidence to demonstrate. Of course, that's what you tell us. But we'd all better just believe what you're offering us because you heard all this from the gods, and you know the gods aren't lying to you. Can you show me why I should believe you, though? Faith alone isn't enough for people like me.
Why do you think there is no evidence?
Philemon asked.
Is there, other than the Book of Revelations itself? Circular evidence isn't evidence to me.
We are a very ancient organization, you know.
10,000 years old, so the story goes.
A brief flickering smile crossed Folliman's thin lips.
An arbitrary figure, perhaps exaggerated somewhat for popular effect. All that we claim among ourselves is that we go back to prehistoric times.
So your group is at least 2,000 years old, then?
A little more than that, at the minimum. We can trace ourselves back to a time before the last cataclysm. So we are certainly more than 2,049 years old. Probably much more, but we have no proof of that. At least not proof of the sort which you'd be likely to accept. We think the apostles may go back several cycles of destruction, which is to say possibly as much as 6,000 years. All that really matters is that we are pre-cataclysmic in origin. We have been quietly active as an organization for more than 1 year of godliness, and so we are in possession of information giving highly specific details of the catastrophe that lies in store for us. We know what will happen, because we are aware of what has happened many times before.
But you won't show anyone the information you claim to have. The evidence. The proofs.
The Book of Revelations is what we offer the world.
Round and round and round. This was leading nowhere. Theremin began to feel restless. It was all a big bluff, obviously. All a cynical fake probably designed to pull in fat contributions from the gullible likes of Boddicker and Vivine and other wealthy folk desperate to buy their way into escaping the threat of doom. Despite Folliman's obvious appearance of sincerity and intelligence, he had to be either a willing co-conspirator in this gigantic enterprise of fraudulent fantasy or else merely one of Mondior's many dupes. All right, the newspaper man said. Let's assume for the time being that there will be some sort of worldwide catastrophe next year, of which your group has advanced detailed knowledge. What is it exactly that you want the rest of us to do? Go flocking into your chapels and beg the gods to have mercy on us?
It is much too late for that.
There's no hope at all, then? Well, in that case, why are you bothering even to warn us?
Folliman smiled again, without irony this time.
For two reasons. One, yes, we do want people to come to our chapels, not so they can try to influence the gods, but so that they can listen to our teachings in so far as they concern matters of morality and everyday decency. We think we have a message that is of value to the world in those areas. But second, and more urgent, we want to convince people of the reality of what is coming, so that they will take measures to protect themselves against it. The worst of the catastrophe can be headed off. Steps can be taken to avert the complete destruction of our civilization. The flames are inevitable, yes. Human nature being what it is, the gods have spoken. The time of their vengeance is already on the way. But within the general madness and horror, there will be some who survive. I assure you that we apostles most definitely will. We will be here as we have been before, to lead humanity into the new cycle of rebirth. And we offer our hand, in love, in charity, to anyone else who would accept it. Who will join with us in guarding themselves against the turmoil that is coming? Does that sound like madness to you, Theremin? Does that sound as though we're dangerous crackpots?
If only I could accept your basic assumption.
That the flames will come next year. You will. You will. What remains to be seen is whether you accept it long enough in advance to become one of the survivors, one of the guardians of our heritage, or discover only in the moment of destruction, in the moment of your own agony, that we were speaking the truth all along.
I wonder which it'll be, said Theremin.
Permit me to hope that you'll be on our side on the day that this year of godliness comes to its close,
Folliman said. Abruptly, he rose and offered Theremin his hand.
I have to go now. His Serenity the High Apostle expects me in a few minutes. But we'll have further conversations of that, I'm sure. A day's notice or less, perhaps. I'll try to make myself available to you. I look forward to speaking with you again. Odd as this may sound, I feel that you and I are destined to work very closely together. We have much in common, you know.
Do we?
In the matter of faith, no. In the matter of the desire to survive, and to help others to survive, yes, I think so. Very definitely. A time will come when you and I will seek each other out, I suspect, and join forces to fight against the darkness that is coming. I'm certain of it, in fact.
Sure, Theremin thought. I'd better go get fitted for my black robe right away. But there was no sense in offending Philemon with any sort of rudeness. This cult of apostles was growing, apparently day by day. There was a big story here, and Philemon was probably the one he was going to have to depend on for most of it. Theremin slipped the copy of the Book of Revelations into his briefcase and stood up. I'll call you in a few weeks, he said, after I've had a chance to peruse this with some care. There'll be other things I'll want to ask you then. And how far in advance do I need to call for an audience with Mondior 71?
Philemon couldn't be snared so simply. As I've already explained, his Serenity's work from here until the Time of Flame is so critical that he'll be unable to make himself available for such things as personal interviews. I'm truly sorry. There's no way I can alter that.
Philemon put out his hand.
It's been a pleasure.
And for me, said Theremin. Philemon laughed.
Has it really? To spend a half an hour talking with a madman? A crackpot? A fanatic? A cultist?
I don't remember using those words.
It wouldn't amaze me to be told that you'd thought them, though.
The apostle gave Theremin another of his curiously disarming smiles.
You'd be half right, anyway. I am a fanatic. And a cultist, I suppose. But not a madman. Not a crackpot. I only wish I were. And you will, too.
He waved Theremin out. The monk who had guided him in was waiting outside the door to take him to the lift chamber. A strange half hour, the newspaper man thought, and not very fruitful, really. In some ways, he knew even less about the apostles than he had before he had come here. That they were cranks and superstition mongers was still obvious to Theremin. Plainly, they didn't have a shred of anything like real evidence that some gigantic cataclysm was in store for the world soon. Whether they were mere self-deluding fools, though, or outright frauds looking to line their own pockets, was something that he could not yet clearly decide. It was all pretty confusing. There was an element of fanaticism, of puritanism, about their movement that was not at all to his liking. And yet, this Philemon, this spokesman of theirs, had seemed an unexpectedly attractive person. He was intelligent, articulate, even in his way rational. The fact that he appeared to have a sense of humor of sorts was a surprise, and a point in his favor. Theremin had never heard of a maniac who was capable of even the slightest self-mockery, or a fanatic either. Unless it was all part of Philemon's public relations act. Unless Philemon had been deliberately projecting the kind of persona that someone like Theremin would be likely to find appealing. Be careful, he told himself. Philemon wants to use you. But that was all right. His position with the newspaper was an influential one. Everyone wanted to use him. Well, Theremin thought, we'll see who uses whom. His footsteps echoed sharply as he walked at a brisk pace through the immense entrance hall of the apostles' headquarters and out into the brilliance of a three-sun afternoon. Back to the Chronicle office now, a couple of pious hours devoted to a close study of the Book of Revelations, and then it was time to begin thinking about tomorrow's column.